Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Mully and Hall. Mornings live at 5 on Sports Radio 670 The Score. 670thescore.com. Chicago's sports station.
Ron stares in, gets the sign from the catcher Flowers. The pitch, this one is hit in the air, fairly deep to right field. Going back is Markakis. He looks up, hits in the basket for a home run. Cup strike first. Solo home run by Wilson Contreras. His 16th. Cubs 1, Braves nothing here in the second.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score here. Happy Tuesday morning. Starts Tuesday in Chicago. Kelly Kroll is in for Mike Mulligan today. Good day to have Kelly Kroll in the studio just hours after she was reporting at the Cubs game, and she interviewed Wilson Contreras just after the Cubs 8-3 victory over the Atlanta Braves, and he was at the center of everything last night, Kelly. And it began with that home run. You heard from Zach Zaidman. Thank you to the fine folks at WSCR for providing that audio. And it was controversial because of the reaction that Wilson Contreras had rounding the bases and the conversation that was we saw later from with Tyler Flowers behind the plate. The Braves catcher had bought maybe a strike or two. Wilson was chirping to the umpire, Ted Barrett. And then when he hit the home run, he gestured, said something to Flowers, made his way around the bases. When you interviewed Wilson Contreras right after the game, what did he say about that exchange?
Yeah, I asked exactly what transpired during that at-bat, and he said he had words for the umpire, which you just mentioned, and that Tyler Flowers essentially inserted himself into the conversation. He wanted to stay focused in that at-bat, though, and then mentioned that they were trying to quick-pitch him with a fastball, and he was able to get the barrel to the bat. So then he kind of tried to segue out of what was the answer to that first question. So I came back around and said, but it was a very intense moment. What happened? And went on to say essentially at that point that he was not trying to disrespect anyone and or the other team, but that he was emotional. He was emotional. And that is who I think having been around Wilson Contreras from day one when he was called up and remembering him breaking down in tears numerous times when they were going through their 2016 run, that's who Wilson Contreras is. He wears everything on his sleeve. He's fiery. He's intense. Love him as a Cubs fan. Hate him as an opponent. That's just who he's going to be.
That's the essence of Wilson Contreras. Yes. And I love the fact that when you interviewed him in spring training, he was so open and honest about what he didn't do last year in terms of working
I've
out.
I've never had a player tell me that he essentially quit lifting, quit getting to the field early to run, and I didn't deserve to have a good year. And that's what Wilson Contreras told me.
So that's what's fun about this season. That was his 16th home run last night. This is a catcher who's playing at the top of his game. He's as good as there is in the league right now. And when he has a moment like that, you're reminded of how much you do embrace him when he's yours and you don't like him when he's not. And so, but I do wonder this, Kelly.
Yeah.
Bleacher Nation had a video clip of Josh Donaldson before this at bat, and he is apparently shushing to the Cubs dugout, and he's saying, you know, he's making the gesture, shush, shush. And you wonder what kind of effect that had on the intensity of the game. You know, this Braves team, going back to their series in Atlanta earlier this year, they had some issues with the Cubs and David Bodie having a hard slide in second base, Josh Donaldson running his mouth before his bat last night. Do you think that played any role in Contreras, Flowers, and what happened there?
I don't know where Contreras was when Flowers did that exactly, so I don't know if it was directly related in any way, shape, or form, but Josh Donaldson seems to always kind of be in the mix with that stuff a little bit, but I don't see, for the most part, Contreras getting too wrapped up in that. I think it was, and again, who knows if it was a completely isolated incident, but I definitely think it had to do with the calls that were happening behind the plate, with Barrett and then Tyler Flowers. To me, that's all Wilson Contreras is thinking of in that moment.
Well, after you got done with Wilson Contreras on the field, he went into the clubhouse, and obviously this was a source of a lot of questions from the Chicago media.
Yes.
At his locker, explaining what happened at his at-bat.
I don't know, I just basically tell him to do his job, I do mine. That's, I don't know why he got pissed off, because that's all I say. You do your job, I do mine.
And Tyler Flowers, who was he's a good guy. He was with the White Sox. I remember him as a good guy when he was with the Sox. He's a veteran, probably old school, probably didn't approve, but he was talking. He did inject himself into the conversation between Ted Barrett and Wilson Contreras. This is what he had to say when approached after the game at his locker.
I mean, he had more instigating words and that whole whatever the heck that was. I don't know. Wasn't happy with the umpire in the second strike. For some reason, he felt inclined to say something to me after he hit the ball. I don't know. He started saying something well before he got to the plate. I don't know. I'm pretty sure he flexed or something as he left the box. So honestly, it wasn't about me. It was about him showing up the pitcher in that kind of situation. That was more my issue with it. No problem with him saying anything to me. But, you know, when it starts to reflect on my pitcher on the mound and our team, that's more of an issue for me.
Does this linger and spread into today? Does this an issue in any way tonight when you have Max Fried on the mound for the Braves and Adbert Alzolay on the mound for the Cubs? Do you see this continuing?
I don't really, because that happened in the second inning. And if it wanted to have continued, they could have done something then. I don't know that this carries over. There was so much more game to be played, and they routed Atlanta last night. Sure, Contreras got it started, but I don't think this carries over.
You know who I might think might talk about this a little bit is Jeff Francoeur, who was in the booth for
now,
Fox Sports South. This is when I think you love the insight that former players add.
Absolutely.
But you wonder how much, I mean, is this, he's making a bad situation worse, or if he's pouring a little bit of gasoline here on some flames. This is what Jeff Francoeur said when he was watching Wilson Contreras, taking himself back to an incident he had with Contreras in 2016.
There's a difference between pimping it and throwing your bat and turning around and saying something to the catcher. It's your battery mate. You know, catchers kind of are the guys, and I'll be the first to tell you, you know me, we've talked about it before the game. I cleared the benches with Contreras in 16 here, and we got into it in the ninth inning.
Yeah.
So for me, I'm sitting there watching Flo. I understand that. Oh, yeah. I exactly see why Tyler was mad. Chip, he's lucky he didn't get decked. He turned right around after he hit it.
And the benches did sort of clear. And when that happens, you're down there. What is your vantage point when that's happening? And what are you ever surprised at what you see or what you don't see in a baseball scrum?
Oh, absolutely. But who you keep your eyes on, right? Like, which guy is going in with like all full on haymakers or not? Like, but this was a really slow evolving. You didn't get the sense that this was going to be a full on bullpens coming in kind of brawl. And I thought Jason Hayward de-escalated the situation pretty quickly, grabbing Contreras and kind of pushing him back into, that's what I was watching more than anything, was just where Contreras was going to end up in the mess of all this. And when I saw Joe Maddon basically laughing at one point, I felt like this is over.
This is over?
Yeah.
Is it over? Yeah. We'll see today. That actually, you have to correct myself. Ted Barrett is a crew chief who stepped in when the teams sort of started to stare at each other and they had to stare down in the baseball fight. Oh, let me at him. And John Tumpane was the home plate umpire, I believe, who was having the conversation.
All of this is okay to me.
It probably is, Coom. And we have to get to that, too. Ron Coomer held a post-game show with Joe Maddon at Maddon's Post between 10 and midnight, and it was fantastic. It was an hour of radio with Anthony Rizzo was there, David Ross was there, John Vincent was there, and if you listen to them, Coom was holding court, Joe Maddon held court. We need to get into that. We need to get into a lot of stuff with the Cubs and get to your phone calls. 312-644-6767. Kelly Kroll is in for Mike Mulligan today. Mulligan Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It was just pitches called strikes or not strikes. That's all it was.
And then Flowers had some.
Yeah, he took offense to it. He took umbrage to it. And whenever you're catching, you do. I've been a catcher. If I'm doing a good job, don't.
Was there something that stemmed earlier in that game?
It was just Wilson's interpretation of what was going on. But it was benign. It's highly benign. It could be more benign. And it just turned into that. I couldn't get upset. I just couldn't. I couldn't work myself up.
Mully and Hodge, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Kelly Kroll is in for Mike Mulligan today, and Joe called it very
kind
benign.
Kind of chuckling.
So you said a couple things during the break, and I love it when you kind of express your opinion, Kelly. You don't get a chance to do that a lot in your role. You do your role very well, but it's not something where you have a lot of time when you're thrown to you to say, hey, I think this about that. But you said a couple things during the break was interesting. Number one, you made a comparison to Wilson Contreras to another player that you have covered in your career. And secondly, the reason this has become a thing in baseball is because of largely it's interesting that you believe, and I don't disagree with this, the outcry over Wilson Contreras' celebration or Javi Baez's celebrations or Tim Anderson. You wouldn't see this in the NBA. You wouldn't necessarily deal with this in the NFL. You look at the way that these guys celebrate, express themselves, and baseball, we get all worked up, and the audience gets all worked up. And maybe it's because the relative average age of the audience is why people get all worked up. But you think this Contreras thing says a lot about the people watching baseball as much as it does the people playing it?
A little bit, yeah. I think that what I was saying is that had this sort of reaction and celebration happened in basketball or football, we wouldn't even be talking about it this morning in a way. Like, we watch guys bump chests all the time and kind of get after one another in a little scrum in basketball, and it's just fun. It gets the fans pumped. They love it, right? They're cheering it on. In hockey, guys are pummeling one another, and we're cheering it on. We're enjoying it. It's part of the game. And in baseball, it's just not the same. And it's considered disrespectful, really. And what Wilson Contreras did, that's, in some people's minds.
You've got Jeff Francoeur wanting to punch him in the face for it.
That's, yeah, I can't wait for that exchange. But I don't like, I will say, I didn't like that Wilson looked over and kind of pumped his chest looking towards the Braves dugout. I think that doesn't need to happen unless, as we were sort of discussing earlier, Josh Donaldson popping off a little bit to the Cubs dugout, maybe slightly earlier. So maybe Wilson felt like it was warranted. Hey, your guy did it. I'm going to let you know. I just got one on you, and there it is. But I think that can be done differently. And Wilson, that is where he will continue to grow. He's a very fiery, emotional, passionate guy. For really great things as well. Like, and that's what I was telling you. But he'll need to harness that, in other words, and find a way to channel it in a way that's
because you see a guy, you're around the team a lot, and you see a guy off of the field that his personality doesn't necessarily lead you to believe he's going to be that guy on the field. There's a big contrast there?
A huge contrast there, just to what he's doing with, for instance, they'll have Special Olympic groups out on the field, and Wilson has taken on an incredible friendship with a couple of them, but he's just so caring and endearing, and they run up to him and big hugs, and he carries on these conversations, and he does a lot of work with the group and for stuff, charity events outside of it, that I know all these guys do great work. But that's the thing, when you see that side of them and you understand that it's the difference of once they step on the field, they just take on this whole different persona. And the guy I compared him to was Russell Westbrook, who I covered with the Oklahoma City Thunder. It's this, I hate to use a phrase, but they go into beast mode. They legit go into beast mode, and it's like this whole film almost goes across their eyes, and they just become a different person. And that is their competitor side, the competitive side of them, versus who they are the second they step off the field as a person, and the way they interact with human beings on any sort of level outside of
Is it overstating it to wonder or to say that Wilson Contreras has really matured this year, and you see it in the way that he has handled? And I know this is an odd morning to maybe raise that question because of what the way he responded last night after hitting a home run, and people are talking about the way that he has these outbursts. But
he's dealing with a lot of things that the average 27-year-old just doesn't deal with. His family back in Venezuela, yeah. I thought that Gordon Whitmire, we talked about that, wrote a great story in the Sun-Times about a week ago about all that he is dealing with and how he processes that and how he's, you know, channeling some of this concern, and he's become a better professional. You've seen it since spring training. You've seen him continue that into the season. Is that a fair assessment, or do you think that's overstating it?
No, I think that's a really fair assessment. I can't imagine coming to the field. I can't imagine any of us going into work and having what is weighing on his heart and his mind weigh on us, and then be able to go to work and not be distracted in some way, shape, or form, or to not have these emotions just flowing through you. And you're right. I mean, the maturity, we've seen a huge step up in the way he is handling this pitching staff this year, and the changes, once again, the way he's gotten back on track for him personally at the plate, the things he's doing. But, yeah, I think that's a very fair assessment. I can't imagine.
Is there any question he'll be in the lineup tonight because Alzolay on the mound? You saw they have a good rapport, and that rapport.
Yeah, he'll be behind the plate.
Okay.
Without a doubt. And Joe already said that. 3 days in a row, Wilson may get the fourth game off of the series, and they'll try to get Caratini.
Did you notice something about the rapport between Alzolay and Contreras
absolutely.
How much that helped Alzolay settle down last week?
Absolutely. And
isn't that odd to say? Wilson Contreras helped somebody else settle down.
And he does. That's the thing. He can. He reels in John Lester, too, at times. There, I mean, Lester was really fired up after that sixth inning and the error in at second. And
he lets those things get to him a little bit, doesn't he?
He does, because he is so adamant to get through seven. Essentially, you're only 3 innings in is all you have to worry about with your bullpen and the matchups. And in that seventh inning, he even mentioned it last night. It's just, it's a bar he sets for himself. He wants to get through it. But what that error cost him was another, whatever, 12 pitches or whatnot. And at that point, Joe Maddon's thinking long term, and there's no reason to keep Lester out there. And he even said, you know, he lost that battle once again. But no, Wilson Contreras can find ways to reel him in. I remember David Ross saying that would be the hardest part of Wilson Contreras' job is dealing with John Lester when he gets riled up. How do you settle him down again? Like, and John Lester's been doing this for so long, I'm sure he can handle it himself a bit. But yeah, Wilson, and with Alzolay specifically tonight, both Venezuelans. And so he's, really proud of this young kid who's also come through so much. And Advert's got family still over there as well, a lot of family. But I think tonight it'll be a really calming sense of having a guy who's so familiar in terms of just their disposition with one another. He hasn't caught him a whole lot.
That is Kelly Kroll, and yes, she was on the field last night after the Cubs game, interviewing Wilson Contreras. Hours later, she's here talking about the Cubs. She's in for Mully today. And Joe, we're going to switch gears. We're going to talk to Casey Johnson in a little bit about the Bulls draft pick. Kobe White and Daniel Gafford were introduced yesterday, but tonight's a big night for Alzolay. Tonight's a big night for the Cubs. You wonder what you're going to get out of a kid because he raised expectations last time out, his major league debut.
Yeah, for sure, and it actually started right before he got called up. What he was doing in Iowa, just complete domination. And as we mentioned before, that's something that this front office has been lacking. They haven't been able to develop their own pitching. That's why they're always chasing it, whether they're spending in free agency or making trades.
Backs it in!
KC Johnson.
Come and get some of this.
Bulls basketball.
Whoa! Stop it! Did not do it like that!
Taking you inside the locker room with KC Johnson.
Oh my goodness! Did you not get the memo?
Molly and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Kelly Kroll in for Mike Mulligan today. We're pleased to welcome Casey Johnson, who joins us on the St. Charles Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram Hotline, home of the real deal. KC covers the Chicago Bulls for the Chicago Tribune. Good morning, KC. How are you?
Good morning to both of you. How are you doing?
Doing well. So yesterday was a big day at the Advocate Center. The Bulls introduced their first and second round draft picks, Kobe White and Daniel Gafford. What was your biggest takeaway? To me, I thought Kobe White came across as very humble, confident, but Gafford stole the show because I thought he really seemed like he had an electric personality.
Yeah, I would agree. That would be, if you're talking just about personality at the press conference, that would be my biggest takeaway, that Daniel Gafford is it seems very genuine, and he's going to be fun to talk to. But the biggest takeaway would just be that Jim Boylan's obviously strong presence was on the dais, and his points about soul and spirit fitting into the vision of the Bulls moving forward, along with their on-court talent, is still pretty prevalent. You know, we'll see how these guys play. I thought that it was made abundantly clear that that fans are going to need to be patient for both these players. Obviously, Kobe's only 19, and Gaffer's coming out after his sophomore year. So, you know, that the preteen patience aspect to the timeline of the rebuild is still prevalent as well.
Casey, I think that's a really good point. I took away that same tone from the Bulls brass yesterday as well. So how do you see this working out? More so with Kobe White at first, I thought it was interesting when he was asked about the situation he's stepping into with Chris Dunn. He mentioned having needed to prove himself at every level. How does that work moving forward for him?
Well, I mean, I think they're just going to, they've been pretty clear that they just were going to bring somebody in and just let the battle play out in training camp. Now, I'm fairly certain they're not done at point guard either. I don't think they're going to get a front name player anymore in free agency, but I think they're pretty set on adding at least one more veteran player at that position. Ryan Arcidiacono has a small chance to be back, so there's going to be a lot of competition there. And I thought, you're right, Kelly, I thought Kobe handled that pretty well. You know, he mentioned how last year not everybody really even expected him to start his freshman year at North Carolina, and he won that position. So, look, if he can play, he's going to start. If he can't, he's going to come off the bench. He's going to play minutes regardless of just whether or not he's starting. You know, I do think that the Chris Dunn situation is potentially got some powder keg material to it, because Chris is a pretty proud and headstrong individual. But he's also got very little trade value, and he's on a rookie deal. So, you know, he comes across as somebody that can play minutes for you on a affordable contract. So we'll just see how it all plays out. But Kobe's going to play. It's just whether he's starting or coming off the bench.
Mentioned that it was the first time we heard from Jim Boylan since the contract extension. You got him to talk about that. He did not want to discuss the staff additions, which I thought was just odd and awkward, and really just kind of underscored just how unusual and unorthodox he can be at times publicly. But that's sort of beside the point, because the one thing I think that he talked about, and the one thing I think that is a big question, is that you draft a point guard in Kobe White whose speed is off the charts, and everyone talks about how fast he is. And then automatically you wonder, how fast will the Bulls play? Did you get any sense from Jim Boylan, any better sense about how he feels about that?
Yeah, I thought actually that was where he was at his best, was just talking basketball about Kobe, in the sense that, you know, he said we've got to be ready to run with this guy. I mean, you know, he said there are too many times last season where we just weren't ready to run. And, you know, whether that's him in a more humane and politically correct way talking about team conditioning, I think there's a little bit of that going on there. I also think, you know, he's talking about, you know, he's putting a shot against some people that need to have that mentality to get out on the wing, and even if you don't have the ball, to sprint down the court. So I think he's preparing some of the players for that. And then even more tellingly, he talked about, you know, Kobe needing to improve his decision-making. So, you know, when the opportunities to run are not there. And that is the knock. You know, he's a 19-year-old kid. He's basically relied on his athleticism and speed. He's got to become a better decision-maker. The NBA is a very, as we all know, ball screen-heavy league. Kobe acknowledged that. And he's got to learn to play better in pick and roll. And he's got to learn to play better in half-court situations, and he's got to learn to play better with, you know, his decision-making. And really, that's all young point guards, particularly somebody who's 19 and who's adjusting to the learning curve that is the NBA.
You say that, Casey, about the decision-making. I mean, that's something that even Chris Dunn's been criticized for at times,
yep,
certainly. And so do you get the sense, though, that fans should be excited about the thought of White out there with Zach LaVine or Lauri Markkanen, and how quickly can that ascension happen?
I mean, the general feedback that I've been getting from fans that comes across via, you know, my Twitter timeline or email is most people are genuinely happy about this selection. They think he's a talent, and look, this team needs talent. You know, you mentioned how quickly it can happen. Again, that really comes back to Kobe. One thing that we haven't really talked about yet that John Paxson mentioned the night they drafted him on Thursday is that, he, you know, they also envision lineups where they can see Kobe and Chris Dunn playing together. You know, Kobe obviously has the ability to play on or off the ball. I think Chris showed last year that obviously he's best on the ball. He doesn't do as well when he's off the ball. So you might see some lineups where Chris is out there as the point guard and Kobe's out there at the shooting guard. So there are a lot of opportunities here. And, you know, in the sense that the Bulls are at the position of the rebuild where they really just need to add talent, I don't think you can argue this pick too much because, you know, you obviously fall from 4 to 7 after the draft lottery, and then to get a guy that's pretty widely regarded as you know, the third best point guard and obviously an athletic talent at 7, I think is about as well as you can do.
So free agency begins Sunday. The Bulls have $23 million roughly in salary cap space. They have needs at point guard. You want to get a shooter, obviously defensive presence. Taj Gibson's name has come up as far as a rumored veteran presence inside that they could maybe come and bring back to Chicago. What are your expectations, KC, in terms of how aggressive the Bulls will be pursuing some of these players, and where does Malcolm Brogdon fit into this equation?
I'd be really surprised if they still go Brogdon. I you know, now that they've drafted Kobe White, he would take up the majority of your salary cap space. You'd have to wait 3 days on the offer sheet. That part about it actually is not as big of a deal now that I mentioned it, because I do think the Bulls are in a position where they're going to be, you know, kind of waiting for some of the musical chairs aspect of free agency to die down before they sign people. But I just don't see Brogdon he'd fit wonderfully as a player, but I just don't see it working with Dunn and White and Levine. So I do think they're going to try to go a shorter term deal for a veteran point guard. And I don't think Beverly is, I get it, he'd be a fit, but I just don't think price wise or length of term contract wise, he's going to work that way. So you're talking, if you do go, you know, more of the bigger name guys, you're talking Darren Collison or Ricky Rubio. But I think they're ultimately going to end up with a second-tier guy like a Corey Joseph or George Hill if the Bucks end up not guaranteeing him and he becomes an unrestricted free agent, guys like that. I think George Hill personally would be a pretty nice fit. And he's got a pre-existing relationship with Boylan from San Antonio, so we'll see how that plays out. And then they need to add a shooter and some big man depth. So, you know, they've got the cap space, and then they've got the room exception. So I think they'll be adding three guys via free agency. And you talk about takeaways. The amount of confidence that is emanating from them in terms of who they're targeting and their ability to get them is pretty palpable.
Like they know something?
Yeah, I don't know if they know something, but they just are confident. I think obviously everybody kind of gets a sense of the market before it starts. That's the biggest joke in the NBA, obviously. But I don't know if it's going to happen quickly or not. I'm sensing a lot of confidence that they're going to be able to get who they want in free agency.
Interesting. Are we not talking enough about Daniel Gafford, in your opinion, Casey? What kind of impact can he have? Will he have? He made a point to say he was a center. He feels like he's a true center. And then I think about Wendell Carter Jr. not really getting to play as much as clearly Bulls fans would have liked to have seen him last year. So how does he fit in?
No, it's a good question. I mean, it's hard to say with second round picks because, you know, I've covered so many second round picks that, you know, are talented or what. I do think in terms of his athleticism and opportunity with the lack of effective big men on the roster, I think you might be right. I do think there'll be a chance for him to make a pretty decent impact. I mean, you know, as long as he can catch a pass, he's going to be ahead of Felicio on the depth chart, right? I mean, let's start there.
Yep.
You know, as far as the center thing, you know, I don't really feel like Wendell is a true center. We all wrote about and talked about,
true.
You know, that he kind of struggled against the bigger bodies when he was matched up against them. So I think you're going to see some lineups where they go small with Lowry at center.
Mm-hmm.
And Wendell maybe either on the bench or playing. He wouldn't be playing four. So, yeah, he'd be on the bench there. And I think you'll see some situations where Gafford's playing center and Wendell is playing four alongside Gafford. So he's very athletic. He protects the rim and he runs the floor. So do those three basic things. And I do think you'll see him out there a little bit. It also obviously depends on which free agent they add as a big man. But I do know that there's pretty genuine excitement, and he carries himself very well.
Mm-hmm.
He's a big body. He's athletic. He runs the floor. So I think you're going to see him out there next year. How much, that's obviously up to him.
Good stuff, KC. Thank you very much.
Thanks,
appreciate
KC.
It, guys. Take care. Thank
KC
you.
Johnson covers the Bulls for the Chicago Tribune, talking about Coby White and Daniel Gafford. And we will talk to Coby White today at 8:20. Kelly Kroll is in for Mike Mulligan. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.